Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
It's a clinker! That blasted, stupid furnace, that gummit! Skates! Oh, for cripe's sake, open up the damper, will ya? Who the hell turned it all the way down? Again! Oh, blast it! Blurred rattles, brass camel clerk, you blucker!
In the heat of battle, my father wove a tapestry of obscenity that, as far as we know, is still hanging in space over Lake Michigan.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays, sports fans. Today is Monday, December 23rd. Welcome to Sports Kings from Queens. This is episode 146. I'm Gino, joined by Darren, joined by Kevin. You can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on YouTube. Give us a look, join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Send us some questions, some thoughts, and we'll be sure to respond. Guys, another week goes by. Jets and Giants both lose. NFL playoff races coming into focus. College football playoffs have started slowly, but started. And some baseball news. We'll go through this. We're going to start it up. We're going to start with the Jets. Rams beat the Jets 19-9. Rams moved to 9-6. Jets at 4-11. Jets, they showed promise early with a 99-yard touchdown drive. Aaron Rodgers' 499th career touchdown pass. But the offense seemed to stall after the first quarter. They had some turnovers, a critical strip sack on Rodgers in the fourth quarter, and some missed opportunities on special teams sealed kind of their fate. For the Rams, the defense and Matthew Stafford, Kyren Williams contributed to securing the team's fourth straight win, maintaining their NFC West lead. They scored 9 points, guys. They didn't punt on 9 points. Kev, talk to me.
Weird, weird game. I mean, the lack of possessions by both teams, like you said, you know, 99-yard touchdown drive, you know, just shows what this team can be when everything's clicking. I mean, you know, first, you know, the Saints get the ball first, drive the ball a bit, punt it down at the one, and then just come back 99 yards. That's almost the entire first quarter. And of course, we miss it. We get the interception there in the second quarter. And then Ulbrich decides I'm 4th-and-1 from his own 33. Let's go for it. Then we don't get it. Give the Rams a short field. They get the touchdown. Even though their kicker misses the extra point also to make up for Carlson missing ours extra point. So 6-6. And then we drive down and get the field goal right before the half to go up 9-6. Then we get the ball back to start the third quarter. 14 plays, 9 minutes and 45 seconds, and somehow only cover 58 yards. Get down to the 13-yard line. And again, instead of taking – it's 4th-and-4 from the 13. Why not take the 3? But nah, let's go for it again. And we miss it. And the Rams come back with another long drive, and they tie it 9-9 in the fourth quarter. And I've never seen a game, 12 minutes left in the game, each team had the ball 4 times. It was mind-boggling. I mean, fast game, thankfully, because it didn't waste our time. And then, Gino, like you mentioned, the strip sack of Rodgers set up another short field for the Rams. I mean, so they go up 16-9, turn the ball over again. This one, I don't mind so much. You're at the 47. It's 4th-and-4. You know, you're down. I don't mind going for it then, but it sets up a field goal. Then you have the missed field goal by Carlson. which was out a very long field goal there with a two-minute warning. And ball game over, and the Jets for the sixth time decide to blow a fourth-quarter lead and lose. You know, I mean, a lot of the stuff we've talked about, you know, flashes of the offense looking good on certain drives, but nothing a lot of the rest of the game. The sixth, fourth-blown quarter lead. It's just been just sums up the year for the Jets. Darren.
Yeah, Rams had 242 whopping yards of offense.
Yeah.
242. I mean, Jets had 321. It wasn't like they killed it, but that's an average game. Rams had 242 despite long drives. They still can't stop the run. Kyren Williams was all over the place. They really could not slow him down at all. But, I mean, the Jets shoot themselves in the foot. The strip sack of Rodgers sucked. I'll admit that. But this team, like no other team I've ever seen, on third and one and fourth and one or fourth and two, they try to throw the ball downfield almost every single time. And they never complete it. What are they, just praying for a penalty? I don't know what the hell's going on. You throw in the Devontae Adams drops a touchdown earlier in the game that they had to settle for that field goal earlier on. The ball hit him in the hands in the end zone. Should hold on to that. That shouldn't be too difficult. I didn't love the going for it on fourth and four at the 47, to be honest, even though I know you kind of liked it, because you're only down one score. Pin them. Get the ball back. Yeah. I didn't like any of them, even though the first drive, so I don't want to be a hypocrite, when the 99-yard drive, you know, they did go on fourth and two when they made it. So I can't sit here and say that, oh, I was all pissed off when they did that. At the time, I didn't have a problem with it. But the one at their own 33 is just gave them 6 points because Cardi couldn't hit either.
It was the second worst going for on fourth down I saw all weekend. Second worst.
Yeah,
we'll get to the first worst later.
And then you had the back-to-back plays with the ineligible guy downfield to kill the drive to make it the fourth and 13. The third and 13 that cuts it to fourth and four with the play that they went for it. How do you go ineligible man downfield two straight plays? How can they not have the timing down for this? This team is poorly coached, and there's no other way to put it. This team is never fundamentally sound. They're never prepared. They have no idea what they're doing. And you know what? Listen, I know a lot of people love to kill Rodgers. Again, he wasn't great, but he was 28 for 42 for 256 and a touchdown. The strip sack, yeah, you know, you would have liked it if he tried to hold the ball away from his body and it got hit. He shouldn't have given that one up. That was a bad job by him. And a couple of the other passes, you know, seemed like they were a little bit off. But there was also a drop touchdown on him by Adams. And a couple other things that just weren't right. The penalties are bad. Carlson, missing that field goal and the extra point just reminded me of earlier in the year. You know, the 99-yard drive was great. But outside of that, they don't get pressure on pass rushing at all. Stafford had all day to throw. And they don't stop the run. This team has so many holes in it. And you know, right now we're getting closer and closer to a top five pick because they're not going to beat Buffalo. And, yeah, can they beat Miami because it'll be colder than 40 degrees? Yeah. Tua doesn't win in cold weather? Yeah, the Jets will probably win that last game just to make sure that the pick is about 11 or 9 and not 5. But, yeah, this is how bad this team is. It's brutal to watch, just brutal to watch. And you know what? They were the better team on the field most of the game, and they lost once again. New York football Jets. Gino?
All right, let's go to the Giants. Atlanta beats the Giants 34-7. Atlanta moves to 8-7. The Giants are 2-13. Rookie quarterback Michael Penix debuted, was supported by a dominant defense that scored two pick sixes in the victory. Falcons strengthened their playoff hopes. Giants suffered their franchise record 10 straight loss in a season marred by turnovers and poor offensive execution. Anything on the Giants, guys? Oh, by the way, they are now a game up for the number one pick in the draft at 2-13.
I don't know how Dable can survive this one.
You got me.
I don't know how, because this team doesn't come from, and they were up 7-0.
Yeah.
Just to put it in perspective. Then they were outscored 34-0 by a quarterback making his NFL debut and mostly simply handing the ball off. Could have been worse, but the simple fact of the matter is that you know, Pitts has forgotten how to catch a ball, and Penix hit him on the hands at something at the 3-yard line, deflected off his hands for an interception. This team can't cover the pass. This team is not playing hard against the run. No matter who they put in the offensive line, doesn't get it done. Drew Lock shouldn't even be in the league as a backup, let's be honest. And, you know, It's the Dable Shane thing, which I know a lot of people were really high on off a couple of years ago, and maybe I was just a little bit down on him. This is 10 times worse than Mangini ever was. Yeah. Mangini's last year was here, he got fired with a winning record. I mean, you know, this team is – they just flat out quit.
Yeah.
They flat out quit. I know he doesn't have the horses at QB. I get it. But this team doesn't show you any fight, and it's embarrassing to watch him.
Yeah, I mean, Penix was fortunate. He didn't have to do much. You know, I mean, there couldn't have been a softer landing spot for a guy making his NFL debut in the heat of a playoff chase here. And, you know, the Giants just handed him the game.
I mean, he didn't
even with the two pick sixes. He didn't have to do much.
No, I mean, Penix, he didn't even play remarkably well. It didn't even matter at that point.
He was mistake free. I mean, that pick was not his fault.
No, he puts in the hands.
I mean, you know, mistake-free football, which is a hell of an improvement over what Cousins has been doing.
Well, Cousins did pray for him before the game started and prayed with him before the game started as well. So they did have a religious moment together.
There you go.
Listen, whatever happened, it worked. I mean, whatever Kirk did, it worked.
Whatever happened, yeah. And with that win and Tampa's loss, which we'll talk about in a minute here, you know, Falcons are now back in control of their own playoff destiny.
Absolutely.
Let's go around the league. We'll hit Tampa right off the bat because you just said it, Kev. So Dallas beat Tampa last night, 26-24. Dallas is 7-8. Tampa at 8-7. So now they are, because of the tiebreaker, they are behind Atlanta. Baker Mayfield had 303 yards, two touchdowns. Critical late-game fumble by Rashad White allowed the Cowboys to secure the win and put Tampa Bay playoffs hopes out of their control at the moment, Darren.
Yeah, I mean, two great plays by Dallas. One was the strip and the interception in the end zone, which I thought was an incredible play by, I think it was Lewis that made that play. And then they had the strip on White after it looked like Baker was dead to rights and he was able to flip it to White.
Oh, yeah.
And then he stripped him as he's going down. Dallas just played like they wanted the game more. It was really interesting to watch that. I mean, Cooper Rush looked pretty good. I almost called him Cooper Kupp for a second. Sorry about that. Cooper Rush looked really good in this game. Lamb, the first half looked good. Then he didn't really do much because he got banged up. Mike Evans was kind of held in check a little bit too. I thought that, I'll be honest, I was impressed with how hard Dallas played in this game. I didn't expect him to come out that hard. And because I complimented Baker Mayfield last week saying, why do I keep doubting Baker? That's why they lost. I gave him the Maloika. I jinxed this kid, and I feel bad about it because, again, he tried to do everything he could, and his teammates would just out-wrestle for the ball a few times, which was kind of weird.
Yep. All right, let's move to what I thought was the game of the week this week.
Of course you did.
Let me take a guess which game this is. Because there were two you could call that were really good, by the way.
Buffalo, New England, right?
Well, Washington, Minnesota, Seattle was also pretty damn good, by the way.
Washington,
I know where I'm going there, G.
Washington beat Philadelphia 36-33. Washington goes to 10-5. Philly 12-3. Jaden Daniels led a sensational comeback, throwing five touchdown passes, including a game-winning strike with 6 seconds left to secure a victory. Despite two interceptions, three fumbles by Washington, and they were trailing by double digits twice. They handed the Eagles their first loss in 11 games, and Washington playoff hopes are very much alive at the moment. Washington, they listen. Jaden Daniels with that game for me secured the Rookie of the Year.
No doubt about it.
I think he had it before but I'll give you that.
If there was a doubt, that was how he secured it.
He's a one-man show.
He was excellent yesterday. Listen,
the Jalen Hurts injury, I think, bailed you out a little bit, too.
It did.
That Pickett played bad, because Pickett wasn't bad in this game.
No.
But Hurts just gives you those extra, you know, options, and I think that really kind of helped Washington out in this game, because you don't normally overcome five turnovers like they did in this one. But great job, though. Great. Yeah. Listen, I had a money line plus 130. I was pumped down the stretch, baby. I thought Washington was winning that game. I had him on the money line. I loved it.
So Washington is now in the seventh spot. They're now two games up with two to play. They have a two-game lead on Tampa, two-game lead on Seattle as we go into the final 2 weeks of the season. All right. We'll go around the league. Detroit They get the win. They go to 13-2. They beat Chicago 34-17. Goff threw three touchdowns for a franchise record 13th win. Jameson Williams had five catches for 143 yards and a touchdown. One of them was an 82-yard touchdown, which was crazy. Darren?
The fake stumble past the Laporta because it worked on, what was it, Thanksgiving, I guess? Or it worked for another team. Worked for Green Bay on Thanksgiving. So they implemented a fake stumble. I mean, you got to admire the offensive coordinator. I mean, that's a Johnson. That's an amazing call that the running back pretends to fall. The quarterback pretends to slip. They turn around. They hit Laporta deep for a 30-yarder. You're like, oh, my God. They prepped a fake stumble. You don't see that. Chicago has some fight to them a little bit. But another team, again, with a lot of talent, the quarterback needed a couple of years to get seasoned, I think, but also just poorly coached. And you see what happens when you have all that talent. I mean, Eberflus is gone, much like Saleh. Jets still have to live with Ulbrich for a little bit more, but they're just not prepared for games.
Wow. All right. Las Vegas beat Jacksonville. Raiders snap a 10-game streak, losing streak. Miami beat San Francisco 29-17. Dolphins keep their playoff hopes alive. Jason Sanders had five field goals in that game.
And the 49ers eliminated with that loss.
49ers eliminated with the loss.
And what we found out is that, you know, you just can't plug in any running back because Patrick Taylor showed absolutely nothing in this game. I mean, usually everybody San Francisco puts in rushes for 100 yards anyway, but Taylor couldn't get anything going.
Minnesota beat Seattle 27-24. Minnesota goes to 13-2. Seattle now at 8-7. Sam Darnold orchestrated a thrilling late game comeback, connecting with Justin Jefferson for the decisive touchdown in the win. Maintained their push for the NFC's top seed. Jefferson, 10 catches, 148 yards, two touchdowns. Darren?
A very exciting second half. They actually traded touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Seattle takes the lead. Minnesota comes right back with it. The one thing about Geno that you still see is he takes sacks at bad times. Like that last drive, you know, it was a coverage sack. They sent the blitz. He strolls over a little bit to the right, and he still finds a way to take the sack. You know they're sending the blitz. If he's not open, you have to get rid of it. You can't lose the game that way. You're only down three. Now, listen, Minnesota, you know, I'm no dog in the fight. I don't really care. But I can't believe that how well this guy plays, he still finds a way to make these bonehead plays on a regular basis. Just shocks me.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I agree with basically everything you said there. I mean, it's just unbelievable that he keeps taking those sacks like that. All right. Buffalo beats New England 24-21. They go to 12-3. Cook, two touchdowns. Bills forced three turnovers. Allen suffered a bruised elbow in the win. Darren?
The Patriots gave this game away with like a lateral pass like in the second half that just recovered for a touchdown in the end zone. I thought Drake May did all right. I thought the Patriots really fought them pretty well. I thought they kind of, you know, did a good job keeping Allen in the pocket for the most part. That's how you can beat Buffalo. You got to make Josh throw it on you. Not that he's bad at throwing it, but you know what I mean. You know, you just can't, you can't let him get outside the pocket because that's where he's most dangerous. And, you know, the Bills find a way to win this one by three.
Indianapolis, they beat Tennessee 38-30. They keep their playoff hopes alive. Jonathan Taylor, 218 yards and three touchdowns after last week's nightmarish play as he was going into the end zone. Darren?
Yeah, he held on to the ball, ran through the tunnel. I haven't seen that since Bo Jackson. I was impressed by that. They were up 38-7 or 38-10, I believe, and then Houston stormed. I think 38-7, and Houston stormed back to make it a one-score game. Indianapolis is not a team you can trust.
I think they found their key, though. Run like an option offense, like the service academies.
I mean, Richardson only 7 for 11.
Yeah, he ran the ball well.
He did.
So, you know, I think that's the key. Don't let him throw the ball too much.
I agree with you.
All right, Carolina beat Arizona 36-30, eliminate Arizona from the playoffs. Chuba Hubbard had a touchdown run in overtime. Young was good again, guys. He ran for a touchdown. He threw for two. Chuba Hubbard had a huge game, 25 for 152 and two on the ground. Darren?
When Murray looks bad, he looks awful. And there are some games where he just looks lost. And this team fought back with what he did. But there's just certain things about sometimes some of his games and some of his decision-making down the stretch that makes you shake his head, because sometimes he looks unstoppable. The Jet game, you know, I mean, say what you want about the Jets at 4-11. They suck. We all know that. But they haven't been blown out a lot. They got blown out of that game. Murray owned them. This is a totally different animal. This game, he just did not look sharp. And like you said, Bryce Young playing well. Chuba Hubbard's a good player. They got a lot of good things happening on this team.
Yeah. Cincinnati beat Cleveland 24-6 to keep their playoff hopes alive. Burrow, 3 touchdown passes. Jamar Chase, 95 yards. His total for the season now is at 15-10. He broke his own record that he set in 2021, single season for a Bengals receiver. Darren?
Yeah, I'm just – Cincinnati plays Denver this week. Cincinnati's only shot is that Denver has to lose out. Denver plays this game, and then they host the Chiefs to end the season.
Yeah,
and and it's kind of crucial. If the Chiefs beat Pittsburgh, they may not need that last game. Cincinnati needs a lot of help. This is the best Cincinnati's defense looked all year, but let's be honest, Cleveland gave them real. They turned the ball over 3 times in inopportune spots.
Yeah, all right. Going back to the Thursday night game. The Chargers beat Denver 34-27, both teams at 9-6. Chargers rallied from 21-13 at halftime, led by Justin Herbert's 284 yards and 2 touchdowns, including the go-ahead score to Darius Davis in the fourth quarter. The win boosted the Chargers' playoff chances. Denver missed a chance to clinch a spot at that point. In the win, the Chargers scored on a 57-yard field goal on the very rare, which we almost never see, free kick.
Tev's play.
He
called it right away. He sent the email right away. The rare free kick. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
So they get the – it was a 57-yarder at that point. Any comments other than the rarity of the play?
That's the special teams. You know, I mean, the Harbaugh family, I mean, they know their special teams.
Yeah.
And he knew the rule. He knew what was going on. And supposedly they do practice it. You know, I'm not sure how many teams really do, but they do make sure they practice it. And really, you know, thankfully for them for the penalty.
That was it.
Fair catch interference that brought him up 15 yards.
That was the difference, Kev.
And, you know, a 57-yarder with no rush, where you're not worried about kicking the ball low and driving through it, makes it, I mean – If you can make a 57-yard field goal easier, that's when you make it easier, when you don't have to worry about anybody else interfering with you.
I mean, no one's hiking the ball to you at that point, you know.
No rush, no linemen coming up. You can drive through it and kick it low and drive it and get the field goal there. Yeah.
All right. We had 2 Saturday games we'll run through. So Kansas City beat Houston 27-19. Kansas City at 14-1 now, Houston 9-6. Mahomes showcased resilience by playing through a high ankle sprain leading to the victory. He had 260 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he had a dominant opening drive scramble. I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but he was ridiculous on that play. The win put the Chiefs on the verge of securing the AFC's number one seed. The Texans in the loss, they also lost receiver Tank Dell to severe knee injury in the game. And as a result of that today, they actually signed Deontay Johnson to be a second receiver on the team. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you feel really bad for the broken kneecap. I mean, the whole team was visibly upset, and Dell was having a game.
Yeah.
And it was friendly fire. His own teammate was the one that kind of took him out, unfortunately. I thought Kansas City, you know, got the benefit of a couple of calls, which definitely aided them. But at the same point in time, I was pretty impressed with Hollywood Brown getting back in for the first time all season, and he seemed like he was finding a place in this offense. There's a chance this offense actually just starts to peak a little bit more over the next couple weeks, because every game is close with this team. Tooney filling in at left tackle. First week you get Myles Garrett. This week you get Danielle Hunter. You know, it's not like he's had an easy run in any of these games yet. This week he'll get either Highsmith or Watt. Usually it's Highsmith on that side. So it certainly doesn't have an easy way to go. And this team, what you notice with the Chiefs is they don't have a CB2. They don't have someone on the opposite side of McDuffie, and they don't have a left tackle. And it weakens the interior of the line when Tooney has to play tackle. So there are places where the Chiefs can be vulnerable.
Okay. All right, and the last game on the calendar was Baltimore beating Pittsburgh 34-17. Both teams at 10-5 now. Lamar Jackson threw 3 touchdowns. Marlon Humphrey had a pivotal pick 6 that helped the Ravens secure the win, clinching a playoff berth, tying Pittsburgh atop the AFC North. Derrick Henry had a dominant performance again, 162 yards rushing. Lamar Jackson set the franchise record with his 37th touchdown pass of the season. Darren?
Yeah, the game turned to me on Russell Wilson. He had a scramble inside the 5, and instead of taking the slide, he tried to run over the defensive back, got hit hard, fumbled it, and Pittsburgh is about to go up 14-7. Instead, it was a turnover. So, you know, just not an easy not an easy game for Pittsburgh after that. They're not good enough to make that kind of a mistake.
Yeah.
They're just not good enough against a team like Baltimore, who's really talented. And they had Lamar struggling a little bit early in this game. And then after that, it just seemed like the momentum just swung.
Okay. And so this week, so crazy NFL schedule this week. You got 2 Wednesday games on Christmas Day, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Houston.
The 4 teams that played Saturday play Wednesday.
Then Thursday night, you have a game, Seattle at Chicago. Then Saturday, 3 NFL games. The Chargers, New England, Denver, Cincinnati, the Cardinals and the Rams. And then the rest of the games are Sunday, except for the Monday night game, which is Detroit at San Francisco. So the next 5-6 days with the NFL, you got games basically Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, 5 of the next 6 days when we get to Christmas. So should be crazy schedule. We will post our picks for this week online as we get towards the weekend.
Yeah.
Any other NFL comments, guys?
No, I mean, a lot of the playoff spots are secured. I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of interesting. There's only a couple of spots really open, and teams need to win out and have other teams lose out in order to have that happen, particularly in the NFC. The NFC 6 teams seem like it's pretty well done. You know, it's going to be who wins the NFC South right now. That's the one spot.
Yeah, the NFC South, and then if somehow Tampa Bay or Seattle winds up getting to 10 wins and Washington loses 2 games here, and we get all the tiebreaker scenarios, but that would be it in the NFC. In the AFC,
pretty similar, by the way.
I mean, you got the Bengals, the Dolphins, the Colts, all 2 games behind the Chargers and the Broncos at the moment. So that would be that's the only other aspect that could come into play at this point. So
yeah, the Bengals kind of control a little more of their destiny because they played Denver this week. So if they could beat Denver, and then Denver ends with Kansas City. So, I'm not saying that they're going to. I think it's a tall task, but at least they have a chance to go head to head against the Broncos this week. So we'll see what happens there.
All right, let's go move over to college football.
Wow, I was so pumped up Friday night, getting ready to watch the college playoff first round, and it was not much of a weekend this weekend. We'll kick it off with the closest game of the weekend score-wise, which was Friday night and felt nothing like a close game at all. 27-17, Notre Dame beats Indiana. Love's 98-yard scamper got it started early, and Indiana had no answers on offense. Leonard was efficient. Faison was excellent. Kev, give me your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I thought, you know, right before that 98-yard touchdown was a terrible interception by Rourke. I mean, after Leonard throws the pick, you know, they've got the ball in Notre Dame territory. Throw the pick at the 2, and first play after that, Love takes it 98 yards for the touchdown. And then they hold them, punt, and then the methodical 16-play, 83-yard drive to go a 14-0.
9 minutes and 8 seconds.
Yeah. That's methodical. Yeah. And, you know, Indiana just got nothing going offensively until the last 2 minutes. I mean, this was 27-3 until the last 2 minutes.
And Signetti punted on 4th and 11, oh, down 20-3, and you're like, from the 48. You're like, now it's like you're quitting. What are you trying to just keep the game close so it looks like your team should finish in the top 15 with the rankings? It was horrible. And he was talking such trash before the game. Oh, we blow out ranked teams that we play.
You haven't played any.
No, he was counting. What was the game he was counting? Nebraska, they were ranked at the time, I think, and you know all that garbage. It just was not a competitive game. And yet, score wise, because Indiana got the onside kick and was able to score two touchdowns in the last 3 minutes of this game, the game was only a 10-point game. But it was never a 10-point game. This game was ugly early, and Ohio State. I'm not Ohio State. Notre Dame just controlled the hell out of this game.
Yep.
Any other comments on this one before we move on? G?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
And the next game, never a game again. Saturday kicks off. We have Penn State SMU. 28-0 at the half. Two pick sixes to start the game. And it was over. Jennings threw three interceptions overall. And Penn State really just controlled the game and the clock the rest of the way. That was that. I mean, Kev, any thoughts on that? I mean, it was Jennings looked like the moment was a little big for him.
I know the turning point. You got to laugh about a turning point in the 38-10 game, but, you know, like you said, two pick sixes in the first quarter, you're down 14-0. And then Penn State, from their own 20, has a 4th-and-1 and frankly goes for it.
He's a horrible coach.
Why? They got stuffed on downs, and SMU got the ball at the 20. I mean, talk about giving the team the lifeline. I mean, they got lucky that Jenny threw his third pick there in the end zone. And that pretty much sealed the game at that point because SMU's offense was doing nothing. They had no idea how to handle the cold and the wind. But, my God, you've got a team on the ropes. Why are you giving them any chance to get back in the game? You've got the wind behind you. Punt the damn ball. Flip the field. Don't give SMU any hope.
SMU's longest drive of the game was 47 yards. It happened to be the first drive before the pick six. I mean, they really – outside of that, they had a couple other drives that went 40, 42, 44 – but they had a 47-yard drive in that opening drive before the pick six. And that they were never in. It was 28-0, and Penn State is just kind of sitting back and letting them do things. It was weird.
Yeah.
Texas Clemson. Kev's going to hate my little comment on this. This one was a laugher until it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was still never really close. Texas just ran it down Clemson's throat all day and outgained Clemson on the ground 292-76. But Klubnik kind of impressed me down big. He showed a little bit of stones. I'm sorry to say, Kev. I know how much you hate Clemson. But the kid actually showed some stones and kind of got him. You know, you never felt like Clemson was going to win, but they pulled within a touchdown, and then Texas kind of pulled away with a long run after that. But, you know, this was 38-24 in a game where Texas really was in total control. Kev?
No, it was 31-10 when they got the two touchdowns cut to 7. Texas responded with a touchdown. And then the part that really sealed the game for them was that Clemson got the ball first and goal at the 10. They get the rough of the passer after that to get a first and goal at the 5. Klubnik runs it down to the 4. And then on third and goal and fourth and goal from the 1, they couldn't get the ball in the end zone. Texas stuffed them twice in a row. And ball game was over there. If Texas scores there, cuts it back to 7, you never know what can happen. I mean, Clemson showed a lot just to hang in there. And you know, like you said, Klubnik did what he could to rally the troops and just came up a little short.
Yeah, you don't expect a Clemson team to be outclassed defensively like they are right now. They just can't. SMU went up and down the field. It was just the turnovers that allowed Clemson to win that game. And like we said last, the preview, SMU just too many penalties, too many turnovers. Clemson was not going to get that kind of fortuitous kind of game against a Texas team in Austin. Just not the same kind of feel.
No, with Blue and Wisner each going for 140. Blue went for 140. Wisner went for 110.
Yep.
You know, they just ran balls down their throats.
Yep. And there was nothing that could be done there. And then finally, the game everybody was looking forward to. And this was not a game at all. Ohio State 42, Tennessee 17. What a letdown. Tennessee had no answers for Ohio State on either side of the ball early. First drive, 5 plays, 75 yards. Then Tennessee goes 3 and out. Then it was 7-0 after the first drive. Then Ohio State went 5 plays, 68 yards, 14-0. Tennessee goes 3 and out. Then 7 plays, 58 yards for a touchdown, 21-0. It was just That way, Tennessee actually made a little fight to make it 21-10. And then Ohio State, we forgot. Yeah, we're better than you. And they just stepped on their necks the rest of the way. The one thing I'll say is, because he was getting hit pretty hard and all over the place, I thought Nico showed a little bit of guts in this game as well. He wasn't accurate throwing the ball, really. But it seemed like he was a one-man band, especially with Samson going down. And he took some hits, and he made some jukes, and he got some first downs in some spots. But they were not competitive. It was that simple.
You know, it would have been interesting, you know, like you said, they got those two scores before the half to make it 21-10. And they had the ball coming out to start the third quarter. If they had been able to get a drive there and get a punch into the end zone and make it 21-17, now you're talking a hell of a lot different game. But they stopped them, forced them to punt, and Ohio State responded three straight drives with touchdowns and just blew the game open at that point. And surprisingly, I'm shocked that Tennessee didn't have any answers for anything Ohio State did.
You didn't expect the defense to get dominated like they were, and they just were. They just got beaten up. First three drives went down the field. Only had two third downs on those three drives.
I mean,
they were 2-2 on third down. They were just picking them apart early and easy. It was not much of a game.
We were texting each other, and you know, you said that the secondary has been a problem all year. Tennessee was able to overcome it most of the year. I mean, they were giving up less than 14 points a game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, they didn't face a lot of throwing teams. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Not a lot of teams in that SEC were throwing at them. They were running it down their throat a little bit. I mean, you saw Alabama come back through the air a little bit on them. But for the most part, everybody they played was more of a running style team. And so I have a question for you guys, just to give you the next round, by the way. So the 7 seed Notre Dame will play the beckless Georgia 2 seed, okay? The 6 seed Penn State plays Boise State. That's on New Year's Eve. I always think that's a weird game because who can really – if you have a family, who's watching that game? It's hard to watch that. My wife really gets into the fact that I'm watching football till 11:30. And I get yelled at. Then you have Texas, the 5 seed, against Arizona State, the 4 seed. And then the rematch, and probably the most exciting game on the card, is probably the 8 seed Ohio State and the 1 seed Oregon. So that's what we have next. But my question to you guys, last week I mentioned that – you know, maybe this playoff should be 16 teams because there were so many teams that didn't get in. Was I wrong? Should it be 8? Did we see nothing out of the lower end of this field where maybe this should be an 18 playoff and not a 16-team playoff? Gino?
You may be right. I mean, listen, I want to shake it off and say it's the first time that we've done this. But I don't know. I mean, after watching all four of those games this past weekend, I don't know. It definitely lacked something to be desired. I mean, I was waiting for one of those games to be a good game, and we didn't get it at any point.
You know, I mean, well, you got to figure, are you going to still give automatic bids if you go 18? Because, you know, the 12 was Clemson. Put up a little bit of a fight, but, you know, in comparison to everybody else.
Even though the Indiana game was close, probably the best fight of the four.
Yeah, but they were the automatic. You had Indiana, you had SMU, who proved that they didn't belong, and Gino was probably right there.
Definitely right. Arizona State also has a bye, you know. Boise State. Yeah.
Boise State has a bye. Arizona State has a bye. Why?
Should this playoff just be the best 8 teams? Should this just be the SEC playoffs with a couple teams from the Big Ten?
Well, I would say yes. I was joking around before the game Saturday night. I said, you know, next year they should just make it the top 6 of the SEC and invite 6 other teams. But then Tennessee went out there and just got destroyed. You know, I know last week I was guilty. I overvalued the loss to Michigan, you know, because they looked so bad. The offense didn't look good. They, you know, to lose to Michigan again, not a very good Michigan team this year. Even against Penn State, you know, another good team they played. They won, but they only scored 20 points. You know, they were held down a bit in that game. And Ohio State proved to me that, hell, they were a lot better than 10-2. You know, you chalk up one loss, you know, it was late in the season. That's why it's fresh in your memory. You know, the Oregon loss, that was the best game of the entire season for college football, I think. You know, we all forget we remember Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, but we have no idea what it was about because it was in week two. If Ohio State lost to Michigan in week two and played the rest of the schedule and finished 10-2, I guarantee they would have been higher than an 8 seed.
No doubt.
Good. I'm sorry, Jeff.
I was going to say, and I think a lot of people would have probably been more on their bandwagon and probably not given Tennessee as much of a chance.
What, Darren, what do you think about that? Should it go? Do you think it should go to 8 instead of 16?
I think it would have been real exciting to see what 8 teams got in. I think it would have been really cool because I think you have to take away the automatic bids at that point, though.
Yeah.
And now you have to be on merit. Now you have to be on merit. So
now you got to have the Big 12 complaining.
Well, because Arizona State wouldn't have got it. SMU wouldn't have got it. Clemson wouldn't have got it, right? None of those three would have got it. Boise still might have had an argument because their only loss was to Oregon by 3 on the road. Ohio State, like you said, Kev, probably one of the last teams in. 2 losses by 4 points. Wasn't like they got beat up in any of the game. They lost by one second, basically, before they had a chance to tie the kick field goal against Oregon. And then they lost on a late field goal to Michigan in a game where they just, you know, Michigan's got a good defensive team. And when you're playing a rivalry game and your biggest rival is able to stay in it, even if you have more talent, you leave them in. We saw it with Army-Navy. I know it's not the same level of play, but we saw that. Army didn't come to play, and Navy, you know, ate their lunch. You know, part of me thinks that 8 is probably the better number, but even if you keep 12, I think you can't have the automatic bids anymore.
Yeah,
I think we have to take the best 12 teams and seed them appropriately because there's no way that Ohio State was an 8.
So
yeah, they're better than Arizona State, obviously.
Better than Boise State.
Probably.
And you could argue that they're better than Notre Dame. And better than Penn State, too. They beat them.
So you put
them ahead of 4 of those teams.
So here's just
maybe
the thought,
not Notre Dame, maybe just 3. Yeah, I'm sorry, G.
No, that's all right. Here's just a thought. Do we, if you're going from 12 to 16, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or even we're just staying at 12. Do we have to look at this first round the way we look at the 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, 3 versus 14, 4 versus 13? Do we have to look at it like it's one of those games, these first round games? That, yeah, you may get some of these winners, but for the most part, the favorites are going to win these opening round games that we saw this weekend. I mean, we don't know. It's year one, so we don't really know this. But is that in our – do we have to think that way now?
I think it was tough because, you know, you had the likes of Indiana and SMU who didn't play the top notch schedule, had good records, and were rewarded for winning records, not against a good schedule. And, you know, teams that, you know, I'm going to put Alabama and Ole Miss in there as the two SEC schools that, you know, yes, they had some bad losses, but they had some great wins, both of them. And, you know, a chance to – they're going to be battle-tested more than Indiana and SMU.
So
here's, and I think they'd be more prepared to play.
So, Kev, here's where I'm going to take – I'm going to take the opposite approach that I was taking weeks ago, which is, well, if you're correct and this is how they're going to value – the top 12 teams, and it'll get a little worse when we get to 16, right? So if that's the way, do we, and again, it's year one, we have no basis for knowing this, but maybe that's the way we got to look at this opening round, which is, yeah, some of these upsets may happen, but dollars for donuts, 9 times out of 10, that favorite is going to win because they are just a better football team.
And
by the way,
home field advantage, especially in a playoff type of atmosphere, is a big deal to me.
And that's where I was going to go next. Do you think the home field advantage really played out to some nth degree with this?
It certainly helped.
Well, I can't imagine Ohio State, Tennessee on a neutral field coming out that way.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Ohio State doesn't win. I'm not even saying they don't win by double digits. I'm just saying that I think that home field made something out of it. I think that, you know, SMU, because they had to go to Penn State and not play on a fast track somewhere, certainly takes them out of their game. They didn't want to go. They had no desire to play in that cold.
You put them in a traditional bowl game setting. We're in Florida or the West Coast.
Put them inside, Kev. Say you put them inside and on a fast track.
Yeah.
They're running all over the place. You know.
But they can handle the cold. They can handle the wind.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't appear that it's going to go that way.
No, I don't want it to. Don't get me wrong.
No,
I'm not advocating for that.
But because of that, maybe we have to start thinking about it a little bit in the direction that I said. Maybe not to the 215, 116 degree, but maybe we do have to look at it that way, that, you know, this first round is going to be made up of mostly favorites winning these games. Yes, we may get an upset the way we get an upset in basketball, but for the most part, these favorites, because they're home, are going to have a decisive advantage in these games.
Do you give, like, the top four seeds a double bye if you go 16? I'm just trying to think about the way you do it. So here's the question, Gino. 8, 12, or 16, which way do you want to see it going forward?
I want to see year 2 of 12.
Okay.
And then let me make a decision, because I don't know if it was these four particular games this year in the first round, or was it the home field advantage really played into this picture, and if they're going to value the teams they put in the same manner they did this year, you're going to get some of these upsets like Indiana and SMU that are just, they're you know, for the most part, these games are not going to be competitive. So I'm not sure yet. I want to see year 2 of 12. I can't imagine, though, it's not going to 16. I'll put it to you that way. I don't care what we think we know. I can't imagine, because this as far as what we saw TV ratings-wise, this was crazy huge for them. So I can't imagine it's going down.
Kev?
I think it's going to go to 16. I'd rather see a couple of years of 12. I want to see some more data on 12 rather than just 1 year and overreact. You know, the big problem is that the size of these conferences now. I mean, you look at the ACC when all of a sudden they're bringing in Cal and Stanford. You know, when you don't have necessarily as much strength top to bottom in the ACC, and you're not playing the top teams, you know, Clemson, SMU, Miami. Well, SMU you may not have known about, but, you know, especially Clemson and Miami were definitely the top two favorites going into the season. And the fact that they didn't play anybody in the conference up at the top.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to be the problem going forward, is that when you've got these huge conferences, if they're a little top heavy, unless the top teams play each other, you got to run up these gaudy records. And they're going to get into the playoffs, and maybe undeservedly so.
Well, I mean, listen, what we're going to find out now is if they're going to change the way they evaluate the teams going forward. We're going to find out if the three-loss team in the SEC is worth more than a one-loss a team that didn't play a great schedule in the Big Ten, the ACC, or the Big 12. That's what we're going to find out, because there's going to this argument is going to happen every year. Florida State was projected to be pretty good in the ACC. They were the worst team in the ACC. They were on SMU.
And that happens.
It happens, right? So that was the team everyone thought they were playing. Michigan was projected to be – they were the defending national champs. Indiana had them on their schedule. All of a sudden, that game doesn't turn into anything. You know, Wisconsin is not a team – and Nebraska is supposed to climb up and all that other stuff. Everybody played against teams that were projected to be a little bit better than they were, and it never really panned out. I remember doing the preseason analysis, and I had Indiana, and I said, big game for them is UCLA, because this team can get off 4-0 for the first time in forever. Right? I was making a big deal about them getting the 4-0, thinking they're not going to go much, but they can get a bowl game if they get the 4-0. They might get 7-5. I didn't think 11-1. I didn't think there was any chance at 11-1. They were picked 17th in the conference. But I was just trying – we were trying to pick out the game that was most important, and that was the one I held out, a road game at UCLA, which they won. And you're like, oh, okay, you know, listen, that's a nice win for a program like Indiana, you know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they go 11-1, as does SMU, even though when they beat TCU, I think it was week 3, 66-42, I was like, well, TCU's defense just sucks. I didn't think that SMU was good, and all of a sudden they run off all these games. I mean, there was a lot of places you could look during that time. I don't think any of us thought that it was that these teams were for real, And then they proved that they weren't for real in the big spots. And I do like the home field, you know, advantage in the first round of the playoffs. To be honest, in college basketball, outside of those real major conferences, I like it when they play on the campus sites in the early rounds. I think you should have an advantage for what you've done during the regular season. I also agree with exactly the way you said it, Gino. I like the 12. I like to see what 12 happens. I want to see how the committee reacts to 12 next year off of what we just watched this weekend, because the committee's got to realize that they can't afford to have two or three years of this same thing, because then people will not care about the first round, because
you're right.
Were pumped for the first round of the NCAA football playoffs. You were.
You had me.
We're going to be anyway. You were, and you're the fringe college football guy. So that's who they can't afford to lose by having these matchups.
I agree.
Kevin and I are going to watch it anyway.
Yep.
All right. One thing I want to bring up. So the lines came out for the next round, okay? Penn mm-hmm. State minus 11 at Boise against Boise State. Texas minus 14 against Arizona State. Georgia minus 1.5 against Notre Dame. No real issues with those three, okay? Ohio State is favored by 2.5 points over the undefeated Oregon team. Darren, if you're ever going to bet them, this is the time, because Oregon money line is plus 114 right now.
I think the game will go off about 1.5, probably, maybe 2. But the thing is
I would that jump what on you're it saying now,
is Oregon won. Usually it's a 3-point game, depending on who the home team is. You get 3 points, right? So what they're basically saying is that Oregon won by, if you take away the 3 points, Ohio State was 2 points better on a neutral field.
Yep.
And that's where they came up with this spread. Yeah. I think that spread will drop a little bit because of Oregon's undefeated play. And Oregon just has more athletes than Tennessee has throughout the field. I think Dylan Gabriel is such an accurate passer, something that Nico is not. They lost Samson early on, and obviously the two teams play each other once, so there's not going to be a lot of mystery on what Ohio State's going to bring, and not a lot of mystery what Oregon's going to bring. I think that game could be really good. I would honestly, early on, I'm leaning toward Ohio State winning this game, and I don't want them to win. I'm rooting for Oregon, but I think Ohio State might just be better, but that's just my take. They also spent $21 million on this roster more than anybody else. So they did try to buy this championship for Ryan Day. So let's see what happens.
All right. Any other college football points before we move on to a little baseball?
No, just one last thing. And it affects basketball, and it'll probably affect football at some point too. They did pass a rule now that JUCOs, their JUCO time is not going to count against their time in college. So you're going to have a lot of 6-year players again, and you'll have some in football, more in basketball, but you will see some in football that play JUCO for 2 years and then end up at Miami, and they're playing. They're a 27-year-old tight end somewhere because they get 4 more years plus like a red shirt year and all this other stuff. So you're going to see guys playing a little bit longer, a little later. So even though we thought the COVID year is going to be starting to go away, this ruling is going to keep the older players sitting around. And with the way the NIL is now and the transfer portal anyway, it's already tough enough to keep a handle on your team. That's all I had.
All right. I'm going to go through some baseball moves. If you guys want to jump in, just tell me. There's a lot of them, so I'll go through them. We'll start Mets. They signed Sherman Aya, 3 years, $75 million. A lot of that money is deferred, which they have not completely identified yet, but it is from what we see, a lot of it's deferred.
You know what? I think that's a good contract. I mean, when you look at – I mean, matches pretty close to what Eovaldi got and some of these other guys. So, to me, Manaya is a little bit above guys like Eovaldi. But the Mets needed to re-sign him.
Well,
so they needed somebody towards the top of the rotation. I still don't think he's a true one, obviously. But, you know, he has such a terrific year. They had to sign him, and money's no object to Cohen.
You mentioned the money, right? So the Red Sox did sign Walker Buehler 1 year, $21 million. So if you're looking at the dollars, you're right in the ballpark, you know?
The Mets still need another arm.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you got to figure that they might be in line for Burns or somebody like that, because they need a They need a top end of the rotation kind of guy, unless you're really banking on Senga coming back from these injuries and being the guy. He could very well be. It's just hard to really rely on a guy that barely pitched last year.
Yeah, and they need some bullpen guys too.
Okay.
And they need to re-sign Alonso.
Well, we're gonna get to Alonso in a minute.
Was market is dwindling, yeah. That yeah, you know, as that. You'll say.
All right. Yankees did make a trade. They sent catcher Jose Trevino to the Reds for relief pitcher Fernando Cruz, who's a fireballer.
I like the move. Never hurts to have a strong arm guy. Trevino can't throw anybody out, and it's Wells' job now as catcher. He's a backup catcher. You can find another backup catcher anyway.
All right. Yankees signed Goldschmidt, 1 year, $25 million. I love it.
No, I thought it was 12.
12, excuse me. What did I say?
12-5. Makes me like it a lot more.
12.5, yeah. Darren?
Yep. I think it's a great move. Goldschmidt, again, bat didn't show any slowing down last year. He was great on fastballs, struggled a little bit with off-speed stuff. So if his bat was diminishing against the fastball, I would have been a little bit more concerned. And listen, I think for 12.5, he's a bargain. I think he's an upgrade over Rizzo big time. This is a guy I've been talking about for like 3 weeks with you, Gino. I want Goldschmidt. That's the guy I've been wanting. So it was like they listened to me for the first time ever.
Darren, do you know what numbers he has to put up to be better than the last 2 years of Yankee first baseman?
Not much.
22 and 70. He gives me 22 home runs and 70 RBIs. It's beautiful. Listen,
I love it.
Listen, we know he's an aging star. I get it. I think he's still got some life left in him. I like him coming to a new team. Hopefully, you know, with the guys around him, he's got Judge, he'll have Stanton, he'll have, you know, Bellinger. He's got a lot of guys there. Hopefully that sparks him.
Now it comes down to second baseman or third baseman, and then they're pretty much done, and a backup catcher. That's really where the Yankees are right now. You can say what you want about Cashman, and I want him gone. I still do. But he's taken off with the Soto miss. He's done some pretty exciting things with that. So,
Darren, he's
done his job.
Freed. Devin Williams, Fernando Cruz, Bellinger, Goldschmidt. I mean, I want to kill him. I can't. I can't.
No, he's done everything I could have possibly asked for. Got me my reliever, got me my starter, top of the rotation for both, got me my first baseman, got me my outfielder swing guy in Bellinger. I mean, what really can I say?
All right, so Goldschmidt was one of the first basemen. We'll go through the rest of them. Walker signs a 3-year contract with Houston, so he goes off the board. They're going to play Paredes at third. So Bregman, that market is out. He's gone basically from Houston unless something really wacky happens. More first baseman. D-backs trade for Josh Naylor from Cleveland. The Nats trade for Nathaniel Lowe from Texas. So boom, boom, boom. We got four or five first basemen right off the board. That first base market is dwindling. I don't know at what point the Mets need to jump in here, but they need to jump in here and sign Alonso at this point. I think he means a lot more to the Mets than he does a lot of the other teams out there.
Oh, yeah.
And listen, I would have loved it if the Yankees signed him, but he still means more to the Mets than a lot of these teams. And I think they're going to have to make him an offer at some point here.
I'm sure they have. You know, it's a matter of is Boris saving face here? Is he going to screw him over like he screwed over the guys last year? Or is he going to let Pete sign what's still going to be a pretty good contract with the Mets? Maybe not the top dollar that Boris was promising. Probably less than what he could have signed for last year on the extension. But he took a gamble, probably lost. You know?
Yeah.
I still can't feel bad for a guy. If he signs for $5,125.
Yeah. You know. No, listen, you're probably right.
The one thing that makes me nervous just a little bit is you don't know that mystery team that comes out and says, you know what, we're going to steal this guy while the Mets are sitting on it. Remember, this is not the same kind of – neither one of these guys, same type of players, Alonso, but the Padres did it a couple of times. They did it with Hosmer, where no one expected. They did it with Bogarts, nobody expected it. You can see a team in the American League Central that says, hey, listen, we're a player away. Maybe Cleveland says, maybe we'll sign Alonso. We just dealt Naylor.
Picked up Santana.
They did, but Santana could be considered a DH on that team. Yeah. I don't think. I mean, listen, it's not like Josh Naylor is this specimen. No. He's the round mound, the rebound for first baseman. And Carlos Santana is what, 37? So again, he's not really the answer. But you could see maybe it's Minnesota or maybe it's Detroit that says, hey, listen, we just want a power hitter to put in the middle of this lineup. And I'm not saying either one of those teams need that player. I just don't like the Mets sitting around that long. Just get Alonso in here. Move on. You know what? He belongs as the Met. You put him in the lineup with Soto. It only makes the lineup better with Lindor in there. It becomes the whole lineup, top to bottom, becomes probably the best in baseball, if not one of the top three at worst. You know, with the Dodgers in there and stuff like that. I mean, just get it done.
You sign him, you bring him in, you let him chase down this year the Met all-time home run record, RBI record, you know, all that sort of stuff. Put his name up at the top of the leaderboard for the Mets franchise. That's what he means the most for the Mets. He's going to get the most money from the Mets probably. Just sign it already.
I agree.
All right, Phillies traded for Jesus Luzardo from the Marlins. That's a move too. Phillies also signed Max Kepler, A's signed Gio Urshela, Red Sox signed Patrick Sandoval, and the Rangers signed Jock Peterson to a 2-year contract. That's all my baseball transactional moves.
It's a lot, though. A lot has happened, and we still have a couple of big names out there to go. So, again, just want the Mets to get Alonso and end this thing.
So that was all the good news. We had one piece of bad news come out this week. Hall of Famer Ricky Henderson passed away at the age of 65. Greatest leader. I don't think I'm talking out of turn when I say the greatest leadoff hitter, greatest base stealer of all time. He played for 9 teams in his 25-year career. He had two. He's got 2 World Series rings, 89 A's, 93 Toronto. He's the all-time leader in runs scored with 2,295, in stolen bases with 1,046, with leadoff home runs within 81. I loved him, watching him as a kid, I have to tell you. He's got over 3,000 hits, 297 home runs. He stole over 100 bases 3 times. He led the league in steals 12 times. In 1982, he had 130 stolen bases in a season. And that's not the most remarkable piece of information about that. He was actually caught 42 times that year.
Yeah.
He attempted 172 stolen base attempts in that year. Okay. And you may say, oh, well, maybe he was, you know, no, he had 116 walks. He hit 267 that year. So it wasn't even a great year. And he still stole 172 bases. The year I remember is 1986 when he was a Yankee.
86.
Hit 263, 28 home runs, 74 stolen bases, 130 runs scored with 87 stolen bases. I remember that year very well.
Mattingly drove him in every time, I think.
Between I remember the 85 he had the 146 runs.
I mean, that was it.
The 85 when he had 146 runs and Mattingly had 145 RBIs.
Yep. They were just incredible. Yeah. Listen, Ricky even when he was an Athletic and we were little and they didn't show games all over the place, you know, watching that outfield of him as the speed, Dwayne Murphy as the grace, and Tony Armas as the power was just a magical way, a magical team to watch. They made the playoffs. They got swept Billy Ball. They played the Yankees in the first round, I remember. But Ricky was just this fun, amazing guy to watch. Every time he came to the plate, he was a must-watch guy. You didn't know if he was going to hit a homer. You didn't know if he was going to steal a base. But he was one of those few guys you didn't want to miss an at-bat on. I loved him. I loved everything about him.
Mid-1980s, by the way, he was my all-time favorite Strat guy to get.
Really?
He was listen. There were plenty of power hitters. There were plenty of pitchers, great pitchers out there. But he was my all-time favorite guy to try to. Oh, I always tried to snag him every league I ever played in. He was like my top Strat-O-Matic player.
Nah, he was awesome.
He's no Don Carmen, but
that's for you, Joe Dorsa.
All right, that concludes my baseball update. Anything else, guys?
We have a lot of stuff, but we'll do a little bit of a preview for, I guess, later on in the week or early next week. We'll get more into the other college football stuff. We'll talk a little college basketball, NBA, NHL, give you an update of where we are and really get ready for the NFL playoffs. But, you know, that's it for us, right, Kev? Anything else?
Nope.
Nope. We are the sports kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the Jets can dominate a game and score 9 points without punting. Please, by all means, download anything we put on social media. Download the podcast anywhere you can, whether it be Spotify, whether it be Audio Boom, wherever you can get a podcast, we're there. We post a lot. We've been posting all of our bowl predictions because, you know, it takes too much time to do every single one of these on the air. So we post them on Facebook. Tell us who you like. Tell us who you'd like to see win. Tell us why we're idiots. A guy named Tedford today told us that that Hoist sucked, but we were right. We got the cover right. Anyway, please download the podcast wherever you can. We all want to wish you. The Kings want to wish our court here a very Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy holidays to all. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.